Hi, I'm the bit before the theme music, and you may just think of me as some silly guy who hangs around before the theme music, but I have aspirations, and I want to be so much more. I don't just want to be the bit before the theme music, I want to be a doctor, and I want to help people get healthy, but the problem is, I'd have to study, and I'm far too lazy for that. Yeah, so I'm just going to stay the bit before the theme music. Run the theme music!
What's this? What's this?
It's the most wonderful time of the year.
What's this? What's this?
It's Christmas time.
What's this? What's this?
It's all humbug, I tell you.
What's this? What's this?
Well, it's just me and my trusty old Red Ryder carbine action 2 on the sharp range model air rifle.
What is this?
It's the Total Christmas Podcast. With your host, Jack.
He's an angry elf.
Hello, you beautiful people, and welcome to the Total Christmas Podcast. I'm your host, Jack. Do you want to do the interactive bit? We're doing it. Here it comes. How are you? Yeah, no, it's a great show. No, much better than last time. No, seriously, it is better than last time. Oh, don't be like that. Well, you're here, aren't you? So you might as well listen to it. Now come back. Oh, and scene. Well, what was that all about? Shame on you. So, boys and girls, I've got a packed show for you. But before I get into that, I just want to say, remember last week I was talking about the Johnny Depp version of A Christmas Carol that's due to come out next year? Well, I got an email from Adam Parker from the Merry Britsmas podcast telling me about a version that's coming out this year in cinemas, and it's called Christmas Karma, and it's a British-based Bollywood musical-inspired adaptation, and it stars a whole bunch of British and foreign actors as well, actually. You've got people like Danny Dyer, who, if you're British, you'd know who he is, Boy George, the singer, Hugh Bonneville, who was in Downton Abbey, and Eva Longoria from Desperate Housewives, and playing Scrooge, or should I say Sood, Mr. Sood, is Kunal Nayar. Now, you might know Kunal Nayar because he played Raj Kuthrapali in The Big Bang Theory. So he's Scrooge. Now, I saw the trailer for it, and I've got to say, this is possibly the most colourful version of A Christmas Carol I've ever seen, and I'm hoping, if I'm not too busy, I'll get a chance to see it at the cinema before Christmas. So definitely look out for that one, boys and girls, and thanks to Adam Parker from Merry Britsmas podcast for turning me onto it. Check out Merry Britsmas. It's great. Anyway, let's get straight into the show. We're going to start with this. So boys and girls, this episode I'm going to be looking at Christmas in France, specifically some of the Christmas food traditions in France. Now, like most of mainland Europe, the real family celebration of Christmas is actually held on Christmas Eve in the evening. Now, Christmas Eve is, in most parts of France, a working day. So come the evening, as soon as everyone's finished work, they go home and they have a massive meal. And this massive meal, their main Christmas meal, is called La Réveillon. I hope I said that right, La Réveillon. And it is like a long and luxurious meal with many courses and a lot of fine, luxurious food. Now, this was first documented in 18th century France, and it came from night-long parties that would be held by the French nobles, and then this spread around to the rest of the community. So often, people would fast on Christmas Eve throughout the day so that they can enjoy the evening meal more. And of course, fasting is often a religious observation. Now, Le Réveillon, I'm having trouble saying that, boys and girls, and let me do it with the French accent. Le Réveillon is actually celebrated around the world. It's not just in France, parts of Belgium, but also a lot of countries that have French heritage. For example, in America, in New Orleans, it's quite often practiced, and in Quebec, in Canada, it's very popular still. And other countries also celebrate it as well, but particularly the ones with French heritage. Now, The meal, the main meal, tends to be turkey stuffed with chestnuts, but you'd also have things like oysters, foie gras, snails sometimes, and often lobsters or langoustines or other types of shellfish. And then for dessert, you would have la bouche de Noël. And I've talked about la bouche de Noël. That's actually just another name for the Yule log, which is popular in many countries. If you're not familiar with Yule log, check out the episode that's called Yule Logs. It's about my, I don't know, one of my first 10 episodes, I think. One of the first interviews I ever had was on that one. I spoke to a guy that was part of making the world's largest ever Yule log. So it's really just a rolled sponge filled with cream and decorated to look like a Yule log. Hence the name, Yule log, or bouche de Noël, which translates to Yule log. Yeah, do you need me to say Yule log again? I'm not going to. Yule log. And of course, all of this would be accompanied by lots of fine wine and champagne. Now, the reason it's called La Réveillon is because that word means awakening. Now, I've read two different interpretations for this. One is that the meal would go on so long, it would go on all throughout the night until the early hours, until pretty much you're waking up on Christmas Day. Well, not waking up, you're still awake on Christmas Day. But the other one I read was that you'd have this long meal throughout the whole evening until midnight, so you'd stay awake and then you'd go to midnight mass, because midnight mass is a massive thing in France, which is a predominantly Catholic country. So there's not much else I can say about La Réveillon, but when I was studying La Réveillon, I found an interesting thing called the 13 desserts. Now, this tradition is popular in an area of France called Provence, and it dates back to as far as the 17th century. Now, in Provence, they have what's called les grosses soupers. If you know any French, you are going to have to forgive me for my pronunciation. But that means the big supper, which is very similar to La Réveillon. And at the end, they would have 13 desserts. 13 desserts. Think about how long that's going to take you to prepare 13 different desserts. Not one, not two. I could keep going all the way up to 13 desserts. Yeah, and you're thinking, I ain't got time for that. I've already cooked Le Gros Super, which is the big supper, or La Réveillon, this huge meal. And then to top it off, you want 13 desserts. 13. Well, here's the thing, boys and girls. Don't panic. Calm down. Take a deep breath. It's all going to be okay. Because these 13 desserts, they might not be what you're expecting. You see, Provence is not an area renowned for its fine pastry. It's more an area where people work the land. So these desserts would be sweet treats that were readily available from the crops that they would produce there. Now, there are always 13 desserts, but the items vary from local traditions or different families. There's lots and lots of different desserts for you to choose from, but you do have to have 13 of them, and you have to have a little bit of each one of these desserts to gain good luck for the coming year. The reason there are 13 desserts is this represents Jesus Christ and the 12 disciples. But then I also read other bits where certain desserts mean certain things. But the general idea is the 13, that's why there's 13 of them. And these desserts would be more things like a bowl of dried fruit, for example. Now, four of the main desserts are just dried fruits and nuts. So these are called les quatre mendicants, or the four beggars. And they represent the four mendicant monastic orders. So you have a bowl of walnuts or hazelnuts, and they represent St. Augustine's. A bowl of almonds for the Carmelites. A bowl of raisins for the Dominicans. And dried figs represent the Franciscans. So there's four of your desserts, just like that. Two bowls of nuts, two bowls of dried fruits. See? See, it's all working out. It's going to be okay. You only need another 9. Now, you'd also have two types of nugget, which you could make yourself, or of course you can buy. And you'd have a light one and a dark one. And these are to represent good and evil, but also to represent the winter and the summer. So the ending of the darker days and the coming of the lighter days. So there's another two desserts, just a couple of bits of nugget. That's fine. Easy one. And also, another popular one is dates, and they represent Jesus, because that's a fruit that comes from Jesus' homeland. And there's a little tradition that says after you've eaten the date, you have to look at the pit, and there should be like an O shape somewhere on it. It's not something I've ever noticed. I've eaten a lot of dates in my time, but I've never noticed an O on the pit, but apparently that's a thing. And the story goes that that little O there is to represent what Mary or Jesus said when they first saw a date. Oh, apparently. Now, other things you'd have would be just a bowl of fruit. So you could have apples, oranges. Melons are very popular in that region as well. It's like one of the main crops they grow in Provence. So that sort of thing, that takes up a few more of your desserts. Then you might have a few different types of biscuits that you'd make. So there, you know, that is a bit more intricate. That does take a little bit more work, but you know. And also a lot of candied fruits as well. So fruit where you boil it down, add a load of sugar and turn it into a paste and then dry it out. And to top it all off, in centre stage is La Pompe à Huile, which literally translates as oil pump. And this is kind of like a sweet bread that's made with olive oil and flour and flavoured with orange blossom and other spices. And it's like a flat bread. And the deal is, you're not allowed to cut it with a knife. You have to break it with your hands when you split it up and share it out. And this is really interesting. So the reason this is called La Pompe Oil is because what the people would do is they'd have their vats of olive oil, and when they were empty, because the oil sticks to the sides and that, you're not going to get every last drop out. What they'd do is they'd put loads of flour in there to soak up what was left of the olive oil, and that would infuse into the flour, and then they'd brush out all the flour, and then because back in the day not everyone had an oven, they take this oil infused flour to the local bakers and they'd bake it into their pompe à l'huile. So these 13 desserts would be presented on 3 tablecloths to represent the Holy Trinity, and they'd be brought out at the end of the meal, and then they're left out because it's obviously dried fruit and stuff that's not going to go off. They'd be left out and people would snack on them for the following 3 days until the 27th of December, when hopefully they've all been finished by then. So there you go, boys and girls, an interesting tradition. And if you go online, you'll see plenty of pictures of these spreads of people with their 13 desserts. And when you first hear it, it's a bit daunting, but when it comes down to it, it's not so bad. Now let's do this.
Do you hear what I hear?
Do you hear what I hear?
Boys and girls, a little forewarning. Bob is talking about a word that some of you might find a little bit offensive. Please don't be offended. It's all very interesting. So have a listen to this.
As we like to say at the Tiki Bar, always remember that it's only a game of numbers. You drink triple, you see double, and you act single. Now, I have made some references in the most recent episodes to potential Do You Hear What I Hear submissions, so I think we need to address them, especially to be done with this one before Christmas. We first need to discuss American director and writer Shane Black, who tends to set most of his films at Christmas time. Think Iron Man 3, Lethal Weapon, and The Nice Guys. When Shane is asked about this, he said that Christmas is a bit like an emotional magnifying glass. If you feel loved and happy, Christmas will make you feel even happier and more loved. But if you feel alone and unloved, it makes all those bad things bigger and worse. Now, his directorial debut was a film called Kiss Kiss Bang Bang from 2005. It is a neo-noir black comedy crime film starring Robert Downey Jr. as Harry and Val Kilmer as Gay Perry. Through a comedic chain of events, Harry finds himself whisked from his life as a thief in New York to Los Angeles to audition for a Hollywood detective film. In preparation for a screen test, Harry finds himself paired up with a private detective, Gay Perry. The movie is funny and has a good plot, but Val Kilmer's character frequently uses the F word. No, not that F word. The other taboo one. In the US, fag is a slur loaded with malicious intent aimed at homosexuals. For us, it is considered the gay N-word and politically incorrect to use. So when Americans hear a Brit use the word fag to mean cigarette, we are alarmed and wonder how it can be used so casually when it is generally considered to be so objectionable to us. The simple answer is that the use of this word to refer to a cigarette is much older than it has been used as an insult. The homophobic double meaning doesn't come up because the common use of the word is ingrained in the English culture. When you hear it used in the UK, it's not a derogatory term. It means somebody wants to go for a cigarette, and you'd never think it means anything more than that. Fag has no negative emotional connotation. In fact, it was synonymous with one of Britain's best-known soap opera characters, Dot Cotton. It's openly used by the NHS in their public health campaigns. It appears on posters in doctors' offices. And "I'm smoking a fag" has become a catchphrase for lazy or boorish behavior. In addition, for most of the 20th century, there was another established definition of faggot in Britain. It is a meat dish made with pork liver, spices, and sauce that you can buy in supermarkets. The company's Kingswood Faggot Factory in Bristol has been making this product in the city since the 1930s. It closed in 2003, but incredibly, the brand has survived. Oddly enough, while they mean very different things, the words, with the connotations to smoker and homosexual, have very similar origins. The tobacco version started as an abbreviation of fag end, which was first recorded in the early 1700s to mean the raggedy end of a piece of rope, which itself was derived from the phrase butt end from the 1590s. So originally, it referenced the butt of a smoked cigarette. It then came to mean the last part or the remnants of anything. So by the late 1600s, faggot was used to describe a bundle of sticks or remnants bound together. By the 18th century in England, faggot became used as a general term of abuse directed at old and unpleasant women. This was the next evolution and was used to describe a shrewish woman by comparing her to something awkward that had to be carried, the sticks. This meaning was carried by early colonialists to the U.S., where it was first noted in reference to homosexuals around the 1910s because of the negative associations with women based upon womanly or effeminate characteristics. It does appear that the popularity of this term might be on the wane. Although you still hear it used, younger people will often just say smoke. This probably means that the bigoted U.S. meaning is seeping into Europe. Pretty soon, you won't be able to say, "Just finished my faggot and want to go out to smoke a fag. Can I get a fag off you?" Cheers and happy Christmas.
Well, well done, Bob. That was a very risky subject, that one, but I found it really interesting. I've always wondered why that word is used the way it is, and now I know. So great work, Bob. It'll be back again in a bit, but now we're doing this. This is the quiz, this is the quiz, this is the quiz, this is the quiz. Okay, boys and girls, we've got to start off by telling you the scores from last episode, and they're all fairly decent. I don't know if you remember, but I scored 8. Now, with 5 points, we have Art Kilmer and Barbara Wright. With 6 points, we have David Ferguson, the lovely Shelley Arnold, Jennifer Kay, and our podcast mascot Elmer, her little dog. I don't know how many questions Elmer gets right. I'm guessing it's not many. Jeannie Mulligan and Kira G. Now, with 7 points, we have our anonymous technology correspondent, Jamie Robertson, Adam Parker, who I mentioned earlier from Merry Britsmas podcast, Martin Goodman, Pamela Wooten, let's say it again, Pamela Wooten, she loves hearing her name, Benji Pearson, Nicola McLean, and Mark Westcott. With 8 points, equaling me, we have Frank Talley and Joachim Johansson. Well done, you two. But with 9 points, shining above us all like the diamond he is, it's Mike Westphal from the Advent Calendar House podcast. Well done, Mike. 9 points. I would have scored 9 points if I'd got another one right, but I didn't. So let's move on. Right, now it's this episode's quiz, and I'll tell you what, kids, they start off fairly reasonable and they just get trickier and trickier, but you're beautiful and I'm sure you're going to do great. Question number 1. This is a true or false one. You've got 50-50 chance, okay? Queen Elizabeth performed in pantomimes during World War II. Is that true or is that false? Did she or didn't she? Question number 2. Easy one, especially if you listen to the theme tune. In the movie A Christmas Story, what does Ralphie want more than anything for Christmas? What does he want? Easy one. Question 3. Okay, you got to fill in the blanks. Complete the title. A Christmas Carol, in prose, a blank blank of Christmas. That's the full title of everyone's favourite Christmas story, A Christmas Carol. But what words have I missed out? Next one. Whom? It actually says who. I don't know if it's who or whom, but I'm going to say whom. I think it makes me sound clever. Whom did the Weasley twins use magic to throw snowballs at in Harry Potter and the Philosopher's Stone? Yeah, you're going to have to know a little bit about Harry Potter to know that one, boys and girls. Not just Christmas. Tricky one. Next one. In Norse mythology, who flew through the sky delivering presents? Who flew through? Who flew through the sky delivering presents? Okay, next one. What Christmas decoration represents the crown of thorns worn by Jesus? Took me a moment to get that one, actually. Because I was thinking, oh. And then I thought, oh. That's why my brain worked. Oh. Oh. Okay, next one. According to Icelandic legend, what giant feline eats anyone who has not received new clothes for Christmas? Which is crazy, really. I think I discussed this before. But if you're going to eat someone, eat the people in their clean clothes, not the ones in their dirty old rags. Anyway, next one. True or false? In France, you can eat sweets in the shape of baby Jesus. Really? I get the Easter bunny thing, eating a chocolate bunny, but eating a baby Jesus? Really? Well, true or false? You tell me. Next one. Oh, this is difficult. Who's going to get this? In what year was the first tree lighting ceremony at the Rockefeller Center in New York? What year was that? Who's going to get that one? Not me. I didn't get it. And the final question. In what country do people hide their brooms on Christmas Eve to prevent wizards and witches from riding them? What country's out there? They're going around hiding brooms. Just imagine that. Laying in bed and all of a sudden, like, oh, we didn't hide the brooms. What if some witch is riding on it? You've got to get up in the cold. Go and put your broom away. Hide it. Where are you hiding it? In the broom cupboard? That's the first place they're going to look. I don't know. Well, boys and girls, those were your 10 questions. And now I'm going to give you your 10 answers. Question number one. Is this true or is this false? Queen Elizabeth. Was she quite the thespian? Was she on stage performing in pantomimes during World War II? Yes, she was. Well done, Queen Liz. Question number two. In the movie A Christmas Story, what does Ralphie want more than anything? Well, to quote the man,
well, says he, a trusty old Red Rider carbine action 2 on the sharp range model air rifle.
Yeah, but I will happily accept the answer in the book, which is a BB gun. I'll accept that. Yep. Okay, next one. What's the full title of A Christmas Carol? Fill in the blanks, kids. Complete the title, A Christmas Carol in prose, a blank blank of Christmas. Well, do you know what? To my shame, it took me a moment to get this one. It is A Ghost Story of Christmas. Question number four. Who did the Weasley twins use magic to throw snowballs at in Harry Potter and the Philosopher's Stone? Well, I said Professor Snape, and the answer was Professor Quirrell. Yeah, got it wrong, didn't I? Next one. In Norse mythology, who flew through the sky delivering presents? Well, that was Odin. And a lot of people believe that our original Father Christmas was based on Odin. But there's also other places that he was based on. So it's a tricky one. It's a tricky one. It's a rich tapestry. Okay, next one. What Christmas decoration represents the crown of thorns worn by Jesus? So first off, my brain thought, tinsel? And then I thought, no, you silly sausage. It's holly, isn't it? And that's the answer. Next one. According to Iceland legend, what giant feline eats anyone, really anyone, who has not received new clothes for Christmas? Well, the answer is the Yule cat. And true or false one again? In France, you can eat sweets in the shape of baby Jesus. And shame on you, French people, because apparently you can. Yeah. Can't believe it. I said no. That's ridiculous. Apparently it's not ridiculous. Not to the French. I don't know if that would be one of their 13 desserts. I don't know. But there you go. Okay, difficult one now, boys and girls. In what year was the first tree lighting ceremony at the Rockefeller Center in New York? Well, I can tell you, kids. I guessed 1945. It was actually 12 years earlier. It was 1933. I did not get that. And the final one. In what country do people hide their brooms on Christmas Eve to prevent wizards and witches from riding them? Well, boys and girls, if you put Italy the same as I did, you got it wrong. And I know why I thought that, because in Italy they have the Christmas witch. But the Christmas witch is a good lady. So it's ridiculous that there's me thinking they'd be hiding their brooms. If anything, they'd be putting them out. So here's our broom, Christmas witch. The correct answer was Norway. Disappointed in myself, kids. This is the worst score I've had in ages. I scored a measly six. Six answers correct. Well, email me your scores, boys and girls. Make it part of your habit when you listen to the show. You listen to the show, you send me the email. Make sure you do it. We got 17 last time. 17, that's a new record. 17 people. You could be the 18th. All you got to do is just send me an email, just with a number as a subject. That's it. You don't have to put any other words. Nothing at all. Just send the email through. The email address is totalchristmas@gmail.com. Send it through, please. I beg you. It's Christmas. Now we're doing this.
Where are you, Christmas?
Where are you, Christmas? How about Solvang, California? Solvang, California is everything you wouldn't expect from the land of surf and sunshine. It has the traditional look of a Danish village, where you can discover handcrafted Christmas decorations, Scandinavian ornaments, and wooden nutcrackers. It calls itself the Danish capital of America, and it rings out joy year-round through its foods, pastries, and wines. It has a Hallmark movie feel with its festive charm, horse-drawn streetcar, and classic windmills. Solvang's Christmas spirit really shines at the Yule House, a local year-round Christmas store that has been open for more than 60 years. The town is located in the Santa Ynez Valley wine country, and its inherent charm, design, architecture, and cozy hygge vibe give it a holiday feel throughout the year. Solvang also hosts Yule Fest, a month-long holiday celebration in December with live entertainment, a light show and parade, and a night Christmas market. If you know of another colorful location built with Christmas in mind, you frame it for Jack, he'll raise it for me, and we'll tell you where to find Christmas throughout the year.
Another fantastic piece of work from Bob there. I just love these ones. I love hearing about Christmas all year long, all around the world. It's brilliant. You've got to check out Bob's podcast, boys and girls. It's that time of year where we're all listening to Christmas podcasts. Check Bob's out. He talks about Christmas films from other countries. And then after that, he chats about Christmas in that country. Now's the time of year when we start looking to watch Christmas films. You know, we're getting there, kids. We're close enough. You can do it. You can start watching Christmas films. So why not find some new ones from other countries? Check out his podcast, Festive Foreign Film Fans. Now we're doing this.
Humbug.
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 Humbug. Bah humbug.
It's all humbug, I tell you.
Christmas a humbug, Uncle. Oh, you don't mean that, surely.
Boys and girls, today I am going to be looking at a version of A Christmas Carol that is, for many people, is the first version of A Christmas Carol they get to see. This one comes from 1983 and it is the fabulous Mickey's Christmas Carol. Now, here's the deal. Lots of other Christmas podcasts and non-Christmas podcasts have covered Mickey's Christmas Carol and they study it a lot more in depth than I do. Now, I want to recommend a couple to you. Mike Westphal had an episode on the Advent Calendar House podcast, Series 3, Episode 1 from 2019. Go and check it out. He has a really good look at it. And the Behind the Bells podcast with Robert Nicholas, he did two episodes where he talked about the history of the making of Mickey's Christmas Carol. So check out those two if you want to learn more. I'm going to focus more on the story and how it differs and how it stays the same to the book, because I definitely wouldn't be able to do it justice if I went into all the other details of it. Just a little bit of background. Back in 1974, Disney released an audio version of A Christmas Carol with songs where Scrooge was played by Scrooge McDuck, and there were various other Disney characters playing the parts from the book. So they decided to make it into an actual cartoon. Now, when it was released alongside a re-release of The Rescuers in the US, but in the UK it was released alongside a re-release of The Jungle Book. And this is back in the day before everyone was buying DVDs or videos to own. So every 7 years Disney would re-release their films, and it was very popular when it came out, and it was Oscar nominated for the best short film. It didn't win, but still, you know, a nod's as good as a wink, whatever that means. So it starts with the song A Very Merry Christmas, and do you know what, I love this song. Yeah, let's play a little bit of it, have a listen.
Joy to the children.
And we get the full credits before the actual cartoon. Because when I was watching this, I was thinking, oh, I wonder who did the voice of that one. That sounds familiar. I'll have a look at that at the end. And then when it ended, there was no credits after, because they had them all at the start. Yeah, they're very nice, the credits are, with, like, you know, pictures of the characters. Anyway, then we cut to Scrooge walking through the street. And this is really good animation. I really do like it. It's a fantastic scene as he's walking along. He's got this big bundle over his shoulder. And as he's walking along, we see the big bad wolf and the three little pigs. And they're together. The big bad wolf is dressed as Father Christmas or Santa Claus. And the three little pigs are stood nearby him, all singing a Christmas song. And I kind of like that idea that this time of year, you know, everyone's friends. And then we get an old guy. Now, my knowledge of all the Disney characters is not great. You know, I know the big ones, obviously, but I'm guessing that the beggar that asks Scrooge for a penny is from another Disney film. I couldn't tell you what it is, though. So there is a few where I'm going to have to sort of ignore who these characters might be. Now, I kind of like this bit, but I also didn't like it. The reason I liked it is because this is our first chance to get to see that Scrooge is tight. The man asks him for a penny. Scrooge says no. But in the book, it says that when people saw Scrooge, they wouldn't even try and beg from him because they could tell by his demeanour that it would be pointless. So I liked that and I didn't like it. Then Scrooge McDuck, I'm just going to keep calling him Scrooge, not Scrooge McDuck, saves time. It will save us hours in the long run. He gets to his office and his sign's there, Scrooge and Marley, and the Marley bit has been crossed out. So it's still there, but it's been crossed out. Again, slightly different from the book. You know, in the book, it just says both names were there. But in this one, he's had it crossed out. And he gives it a tap with his walking stick to knock the snow off. And we can see it says Scrooge and Marley. And just before he goes inside, he mentions Marley. You can hear the joke. Have a listen to this.
My partner, Jacob Marley, dead 7 years today. He was a good un. He robbed from the widows and swindled the poor. In his will, he left me enough money to pay for his tombstone. Ha! And I had him buried at sea.
But as he tells the joke, he actually looks at the camera. Like he's breaking the fourth wall. Because that's the only time he does it in the whole cartoon. Then he goes into his office and Bob Cratchit is there. Or should I say, Mickey Mouse is there, our Bob Cratchit. And he's got a lump of coal in his hand. And he's just about to put it in the fire, but Bob's like, get that out of there. Which was good, because, again, that's taken from the book. Mickey, or Bob, asks for the day off. Does he? Hold on.
Speaking of work, Mr. Scrooge, tomorrow is Christmas, and I was wondering if I could have half a day off?
Yeah, half a day. That's always annoyed me, because this, for me, like I mentioned earlier, for me, as well as many other people, this was the first version I was familiar with of A Christmas Carol. And when I say familiar with, I had probably seen other versions before watching this one, but I watched this over and over because I loved it so much. And so certain things stuck in my mind, and the fact that he asked for a half day off always made me think that that maybe was what it was like in the book. It's not. He wants the whole day off. I don't know why. There's no reason why he would ask for a half day instead of a whole day. Really annoyed me, that did. Anyway, Scrooge does let him have the day off, and we find out how much he pays Bob, which is 2 shillings a day.
Two shillings and a halfpenny, sir.
Oh, yes. I gave you that raise 3 years ago.
Yes, sir, when I started doing your laundry.
Sorry, yeah, 2 shillings and halfpenny because of the laundry thing. Yep. And then he chucks a big bag of laundry at Mickey. Then in comes his nephew, and it really is his nephew. It's Donald Duck, plays nephew Fred, and he's a really likeable version of Fred. I thought this was really good, the way this bit was done. And this bit interested me, though, because when they're talking about Christmas, Mickey, Bob Cratchit, actually defends it. Have a listen.
But sir, Christmas is a time for giving, a time to be with one's family.
Yeah, now that should be one of Fred's lines, and I'm wondering if they gave that to Mickey, because it's called Mickey's Christmas Carol. He ain't in it that much. He ain't in it that much at all. So maybe that's why they gave him the line. But I didn't really think that was in character for the sort of thing Bob would do and say. Anyway, that's fine. There's a great bit where the animation is fantastic when Scrooge opens the door and he kicks Donald right up the backside. He goes flying. And as he slams the door, he's like in midair slamming the door. Just that little bit. Really well animated. I love that bit. Then we get the portly gentleman coming in, and only one of them is portly, and he's a mole, and the other one is not portly, and he's a rat, or a water rat, to be precise, a water vole. Yeah, you've got Ratty and Mole from The Tale of Mr. Toad. Now, The Tale of Mr. Toad, I'm not sure if you're familiar with it. It came out together with the story of Ichabod Crane. It was like a two-part feature. And this was taken, it was a story from The Wind in the Willows. It wasn't the whole story of The Wind in the Willows. It's a shame, actually, because I think Disney could have done a really good job of the whole of The Wind in the Willows. It would have been good. But they didn't do that. They did a very short version focusing on Mr. Toad, who will pop up later on. But here we get Ratty and Mole as the portly gentleman. And it's a very funny line, actually. It's a very clever bit. Have a listen to this.
Well, you realise if you give money to the poor, they won't be poor anymore, will they?
Well,
and if they're not poor anymore, then you won't have to raise money for them anymore.
Well, I suppose.
And if you don't have to raise money for them anymore, then you would be out of a job. Oh, please, gentlemen, don't ask me to put you out of a job, not on Christmas Eve.
I thought that was very good. I think that's the first time I sort of came across that idea of him trying to suggest to the portly gentleman that he's doing them a favour. Then Mickey leaves, and then much later, Scrooge leaves. And Scrooge leaves, I noticed the clock, at 9 o'clock in the evening. That's how late he stays at work. Then he walks home, and it's again a lovely scene of him walking through the streets in the dark. He gets back home, and the knocker on his door transforms. And this is something completely different, because he sees the knocker transform into Marley's face, who is Goofy. And instead of being shocked and terrified, he squeaks his nose.
Ow!
Yeah. And then he goes in the house. He's a little bit shaken up by this. Makes his way up the stairs. And on his way up the stairs, he's followed by the shadow of Jacob Marley. It's an interesting bit. I kind of like that because in the book, a little bit is mentioned about the stairs. And so I'm glad that there was a little scene on the stairs. It's not like in the book, but I kind of liked it. So then we get the scene where Marley tells Scrooge what he did wrong. And I want to play the first bit for you.
Remember when I was alive, I robbed the widows and swindled the poor?
Yes, and all in the same day. Oh, you had class, Jacob.
Yep. No, no.
That always annoyed me a little bit. It just annoys me that he's proud. I know it's just a joke, but it just annoys me. I shouldn't, but yeah. Anyway, the conversation, none of the dialogue is similar to the book at all, but they cover the main points. It's short. It's concise, though. It's all there. And then Marley leaves. And this is another bit, because obviously Goofy is a slapstick character. And there's a bit where, as he leaves, he clatters down the stairs. And just as he's going, Scrooge says, oh, watch the first... And he hears all this clattering, and he goes, oh, step. Because he said it too late. But being the person I am, it annoyed me, because I'm thinking, hang on a minute. We know that used to be Marley's house. How come he's falling down the stairs? He must know the first step's got... That's the kind of way my brain works. Let's just forget that. It's just a gag and I shouldn't even mention it. Scrooge goes to bed and we get our first ghost, and it is Jiminy Cricket. And he's fantastic. I really like Jiminy Cricket. I've always liked him as a character. And they fly across the rooftops of London, holding on to Jiminy Cricket's umbrella. And there's a bit where they go through this big, huge billow of smoke. And as the smoke disperses, Scrooge is left with like a big mop of white hair. And I thought they missed a chance there for it to have been like a big mop of white hair, but also a white beard to make him look like Santa. Shame they didn't do that, but they did what they did. And they go straight to Fezziwig's party. Yeah, there's no bit when he's even younger at school. Straight to Fezziwig's party. And we see loads of different characters like Chip and Dale, Huey, Dewey and Louie. In Mike Westfield's podcast, he talks about all the other background characters there. and mentions, I think, pretty much every one of them. I can't do that. I'm not going to even try. But we do get to see lots of other characters. Mr. Fezziwig is played by Mr. Toad, that I mentioned earlier. And he's also the fiddler. Not just Mr. Fezziwig, he's the fiddler as well. And they don't focus on the idea that what a great boss Fezziwig was, which is a shame. They just focus on Scrooge meeting Belle. And I say Belle, it's not Belle, it's Isabel. And I say Isabel, it's not Isabel, it's Daisy Duck. And I've got to say, boys and girls, as an aside, I've always fancied Daisy Duck. She's glorious. Never really fancied Minnie. She always seemed a bit straight. But Daisy Duck, I don't know what it is about her. She's got a certain something. I don't know if it's those eyes with the big long lashes. Anyway, let's not talk about that sort of thing. Scrooge is really shy. Isabel gives him a kiss under the mistletoe, and he's clearly madly in love. Then we cut to a few years later, and Isabel, Daisy, goes to visit Scrooge, and she mentions he's bought this honeymoon cottage and when are they going to get married. And he says, well, you missed your last payment for the honeymoon cottage by, I think he says, half a day, so I'm foreclosing and I'm repossessing the cottage. And she storms out. And do you know what, from when I was a kid watching this, there's a line that Jiminy Cricket says that always stuck in my mind. Have a listen to this.
You love your gold more than that precious creature, and you lost her forever.
Absolutely love the way he says that. Really do. That always stuck with me. That's all we get for the Ghost of Christmas Past, but then you've got to remember, this is only a 25-minute cartoon. They can't fit a massive amount in there. So that's our one scene. Then we get the Ghost of Christmas Present, and he's the giant from Mickey and the Beanstalk. Willy the Giant, his name is. And it's great, actually, the scene of him in Scrooge's bedroom, and there's piles and piles of food, and there's a little bit. Have a listen to this.
And don't forget the chocolate pot roast with the smash you. Though it's the smash you. Though it's the smash you. Though with yogurt.
Well, I never got that. Is he trying to say pistachio? Because if he's trying to say pistachio, why would you go from that to yogurt? Have I missed the word? Is it something else that he wants to have? I don't know. And if it is pistachio, why don't you just say hazelnuts or walnuts or something like that instead? I don't know. Maybe it's not pistachio he's trying to say. Anyway, that's not massively important. They leave the house, and the way they leave that is by him lifting the roof off the house, and they clamber out. And I love this next bit where he reaches down, plucks a lamppost, takes off the top of it and uses it as a torch, and he's sort of shining it into, and he lifts up the roof of one building. And this woman screams, so close it down again. And then he looks into another building, and that's where Cratchit lives. And let me play this bit for you.
What's she cooking, a canary? Surely they have more food than that. Look on the fire.
That's your laundry.
Yeah, the food they have is very meagre, ridiculously meagre. And this is one of those versions of A Christmas Carol that I think is responsible for making everyone think that Bob Cratchit was incredibly poor. He wasn't as poor as it's made out in certain versions. The idea is they're not rich, but they still have a wonderful Christmas. They do have food. They do have a great meal. It's not a massive meal, but it's enough. Enough is as good as a feast. And this version, particularly with me, cemented the idea for many, many years. I thought that Cratchit was incredibly poor. Not really the case. He was doing a lot better than a lot of other people. And what the scene is really trying to get across is how, without a massive amount, you can still have a wonderful time as a family. But with this version, there's a bit where Mickey, always stuck in my head, there's a bit where Mickey's got a pea and he's slicing a pea with a knife and fork. And then there's a lovely bit where Morty Fieldmouse, who plays Tiny Tim, and he does a brilliant job, actually. He's so very, very cute. He'd give Robin the Frog from A Muppet Christmas Carol a good run for his money, I think. He's one of the best Tiny Tims. And he offers his dad his little drumstick from the turkey, which looks like a canary. Lovely bit, that. And at this point, I want to mention, Minnie Mouse doesn't have a line in the whole thing. I mean, Mickey hasn't got many, like I mentioned earlier, but Minnie doesn't even open her mouth, not once. That is the end of The Ghost of Christmas Present. It's only the one scene. Then we get The Ghost of Christmas Yet to Come. Now, The Ghost of Christmas Yet to Come is Pete. I don't know if he's got a longer name than that. He was a baddie in a lot of the Donald Duck and Mickey Mouse cartoons. And they're in a graveyard, and the only place they go is the graveyard. And the first bit we see is Mickey and family at Tiny Tim's grave. So we find out that he passed away. But then we get a couple of weasels, again from The Tale of Mr. Toad. They're gravediggers. One of them sounds a lot like Peter Lorre, and this is what they say.
I've never seen a funeral like this one.
Aye, no mourners, no friends to bid him farewell.
Oh, well, let's rest a minute before we fill it in, eh? He ain't going nowheres.
And I thought that was okay, because like I mentioned earlier, this is a very short version of A Christmas Carol. But sometimes in shorter versions, the ghost of Christmas Yet to Come just shows Scrooge's gravestone. It's like, look, you're going to die. And that's fine, but that's not what it's trying to say in the book. This one, they don't have all the other scenes about the people talking in the street or at old Joe's parlour, but they do have these two weasel gravediggers, talking about Scrooge. So we get the idea of why he's disliked. Now, the gravediggers walk off and Scrooge goes over and he says this.
Whose lonely grave is this?
And I'm thinking, can you not read, Scrooge? I could see what it said on that tombstone while they were still stood there digging the grave. They've gone, and you're stood right next to it. But then Pete lights a match on the gravestone to light what it says, and we get this classic line.
Why, yours, Ebenezer, the richest man in the cemetery.
And then he wakes up on Christmas Day, and he looks out the window, and it's glorious, and he says, it's Christmas Day. Well, here's a question for you. How does he know it's still Christmas Day? Again, I know this is a very short version. In the book, it seems like he's been with the spirits for days. In this version, obviously, he's only been gone about 10, 12 minutes. But how does he know? Because he doesn't talk to a boy in the street. Disappointed, kids. Very disappointed. Then he goes into the street and he sees the portly gentleman. And he takes a bag of coins, pours them into Mole's hat and puts the hat back on Mole's head. Mole lifts the hat and Ratty says this.
20 gold sovereigns, oh no!
Well, I counted 37 gold pieces. So then he says, not enough, and he gives him some more. At this point, he pulls down Mole's trousers and shoves the coins into his trousers. And Mole's there with his underwear showing. What's that all about? It's embarrassing the poor guy. He's quite meek, Mole is. There's no reason to treat him like this. Then he's going, is that still not enough? And he gives him more, and then this is said.
Here you are. 100 gold pieces. And not a penny more! Not a penny more!
Okay, well, I've got two things wrong with that. First thing, there's much, much, much more than 100 gold pieces. Because he's given him like 6 bags, and the first bag alone had 37 in it. Second thing that I found wrong with that is when he says, and not a penny more. Because in the book, and most versions, he says, and not a penny less. But in this one, he says, and not a penny more. Well, he's wrong because it's not a penny more. But also, I didn't like the fact that he said it that way. He should have said, and not a penny less. Suggesting that he, you know, was keen to give as much as he did. He's walking down the street, wishing everyone a Merry Christmas. He sees the beggar from yesterday, wishes him a Merry Christmas. I'm thinking, yeah, that's something. Why not give him some cash as well? He was begging yesterday. You give him nothing. Today he still needs money. And you said Merry Christmas. That's almost as bad as giving him nothing. Well, you have given him nothing. You've still given him nothing. Could have given him something. And then he sees Fred in the street and he says, I'll be coming around for dinner. And I love the way Donald says this.
I'll be over promptly too. Keep it piping hot.
Come over, Mr. Scrooge. I'm here. And a very Merry Christmas to you.
I like that. And then he goes round to the Cratchit's house. Now, sometimes I'd get annoyed about this when in different versions of him turning up on people, like it happens in a Muppet Christmas Carol, where he turns up on a doorstep and he's like all gruff and he's like, oh, what are you doing? And there's other versions that do the same thing. I used to think that's a bit of a trope. They're all copying each other, but they're not copying each other. They're copying the book. And I should have realised that a long time ago. In the book, when Cratchit goes into work, Scrooge is acting all gruff with him before he suddenly turns. Well, of course he's going to do it if he's on the doorstep. Then there's a line that I love. Have a listen to this.
And another thing, Cratchit. I've had enough of this half-day off stuff. You leave me no alternative but to give you...
Toys!
Yes, toys. No. I'm giving you a raise and making you my partner.
And it's a nice one. It's not just like he's giving him a raise. He's actually making him partner. And I do like it. Even though it's not in the book, I do like it when he goes overboard with his generosity, making Cratchit a partner and giving him everything. And then we get the final line from Tiny Tim, of course, which is this.
And God blesses everyone.
And there we go, boys and girls. That was this fantastic version of A Christmas Carol, one of the all-time classics, one that I'm sure is a favourite for many of you as well. And it's one that I've watched before, it's one that I definitely will watch again and again. Excellent work. Now let's do this. Boys and girls, in the past, a number of times I have recommended LibriVox. Now, LibriVox is a website where they take books that are in the public domain and volunteers record them as audiobooks, and you can download them, and it's completely free. And I've listened to lots of books on there, at least two versions of A Christmas Carol I've listened to on there. This week, I'd listened to The Wonderful Wizard of Oz by L. Frank Baum. Now, a lot of people sort of consider The Wizard of Oz a Christmas film. It has nothing to do with Christmas at all, apart from the fact that, definitely in the UK, and I'm sure in some other countries, it always seemed to be shown at Christmas time. Now, I must have seen the film loads of times when I was a kid, and I watched it recently with my girls and was amazed at just how good it was and how well it had held up over all these years. Now, despite being familiar with the film, I'd never read the book, and I thought, you know what, I'll listen to the audiobook. So yesterday I listened to the whole thing in one go. I had a long day gardening and I listened to the whole book, and it's about 5 hours long, and I really enjoyed it. So there's a lot of things that are very similar to the film, but there's a number of things that I think will surprise you that do not appear in the film at all. And there's also some subtleties in there that are really clever that I definitely think you'll enjoy. So if you've never read the book or you've never listened to the audiobook, I think you should do it. Have a listen to it. The Wonderful Wizard of Oz by L. Frank Baum. Now, in the book series, he actually wrote 14, but then after he died, the publishing company continued to release books in the series, and I think it went up to number 40. Now, I'm probably not going to listen to all 40, but I think I will listen to a few more of the earlier books in the next couple of weeks. So there you go, boys and girls. If you've never had a listen to it, go and check it out. I think you'll enjoy it. I really do. And that is it for this episode. I really hope you've enjoyed it. I want to say a big thank you, of course, to Bob Baker for his fantastic segments, and also to every single one of you who sent in your scores. I really do appreciate it. Now, don't forget, you've got to send me your score from this week. The email address is totalchristmas@gmail.com, or you can go on the website totalchristmaspodcast.com. I'll be back again in 2 weeks' time, but in the meantime, you know I love you. Merry Happy Christmas.
Good news, folks. Santa Claus, the one and only, has finally been spotted. Old Saint Nick appears to be traveling at supersonic speed. He's setting things right, bringing joy and cheer wherever he goes. Yes, folks, Kris Kringle has pulled it out of the bag and delivered Christmas to excited children all over the world.